WildTalkRadio.com.
Theme song!
This is the Firefly Funhouse! And I want to introduce you to some very special friends that I met along the way.
Hey, this is Adam Copeland, a.k.a. the Rated R Superstar.
Hey guys, this is Renee Paquette.
This is Kane from WWE.
This is WWE Superstar Drew McIntyre.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Hi, this is Bree.
And this is Nikki, and we're the Battle Twins.
This is Christopher Daniels, and what I like to do on my off days is listen to the rap, and now...
And it is awesome.
Satisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
I'm gonna break you, bitch, you hear me?
You can love, but you can't touch.
Ruthless aggression.
With your host...
They've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker. Taker, Taker, Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
Stickers!
And her producer, Sir Rockin.
My little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
If you smell...
Ow!
What the game is playing.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
Yowie wowie!
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you by our friends over at MBG Films. Check them out, youtube.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over on RackRadioShow.com, WildTalkRadio.com, or directly on Twitch, thank you so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. If you're on Twitch and you happen to have a Prime Gaming sub available, well, you can use it here for free for 30 days. All you have to do is hit the little purple button down the bottom of the screen, and you can subscribe for free. It is that simple. You can also subscribe the regular way, follow the channel, hang out in chat, or listen to the archive. We are happy to have you any way we can get you. It is not Thursday night. It is a Saturday night. And, well, there's another show that generally goes here, but it is a special weekend because it is WrestleMania. We've made it. It's here. And we're going to talk about night one of WrestleMania. I'm your host, Lindsay Ward. Joining me, as always, is the ever-faithful producer, slash co-host, slash handyman, Sir Rockin. And to make up for the fact that CB Radio is not airing, we have the one, the only, the intern, Kane Kittens, joining us as well to talk all about the show tonight.
Is this where we're supposed to do...
Yeah. Is this where we're supposed to do... What's that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you be sub, I'll be Rob. Hang on. I will I'll check back in about 30 minutes.
He'll be back in 30 minutes.
Okay. bring snacks when you do.
And kid noises in the background. So we're here. Speak to us at Wild Talk Radio, at Rack Radio Show, at Lynn's Word. Come to WildTalkRadio.com, RackRadioShow.com, or Twitch.tv/WTLive. Tune in with us live. Talk all things WrestleMania Day 1, Night 1, WrestleMania 70, Saturday, whatever you want to call it, because it all went down tonight.
Hey, Rock, who's in the match again?
Exactly. Whose side is he on? And all those different things. It was an eventful day for WWE. They announced a partnership with AAA. They own it.
Which is crazy.
I mean, you get you get CMLL with AEW. Hey, AAA is sitting out there. And Conan's not the biggest fan of Tony.
But it's not like it's a partnership. It's an owner. They own it.
They sold it.
Well, it's also, I mean, who knows what kind of financial straits they were in, anything. And if you're gonna, I mean, if you're gonna have an ownership deal in Mexico, you might as well go for that.
If you want to build to like the old developmental system and branch out of performance centers across the globe,
yeah, do your regionals like Hunter originally wanted to. And coming in, it what was it June?
Is the World NXT World Collide? Yeah.
Yeah, Worlds Collide, NXT, and AAA.
Like that came out early, like earlier in the day. Like right. it was a rumor. So it's like, all right, cool. And that's what Hunter's announcement was going to be, or like Evolution or whatever. No, it was, hey, we own AAA now. It's like, oh.
Well, and when you look at the people who were around, some of the former AAA talents, you know, Andrade and like Rey was there, and was Phoenix as well.
They were all there, yeah.
Yeah, Phoenix was there.
I mean, you've got people who have ties with that. AEW was already announcing their dual show with CMLL, but this is going to give you the chance to, like you said, set up a regional, get some new talent on your TV that will get them exposure, so that's good. And, you know, who knows, maybe TNA will also get involved with that.
Indeed. So
they're building a conglomerate.
They really are. But that's the big news. And then there's WrestleMania itself, which had three title changes.
Yeah.
On the show. It was a wild night. A really wild night. It opened with Gunther defending the World's Heavyweight Championship against Jey Uso.
I said it last night, and I'll say it again. We should have done pick 'em on how long Jey's entrance was going to be. We should have done it.
That man took his sweet time. He savored that moment.
5-ish minutes later, he gets to the ring.
Well, we joke too. Like, are they going to send him down the ramp, or are they going to put him in the crowd? And then it's like, oh, he's in the crowd. Oh God, it's going to take him a while.
It's going to be a minute. It's going to take a second. But Jey got a good reaction coming down through the crowd. They had the Raiders cheerleaders there. They had people with Yeet flags. There was a DJ. There was an announcement for a game sponsor, I guess the main sponsor of the show. All wrapped up into one as Jey made his way to the ring. And then we got the ring general himself coming out with a divided video screen door, which was really cool. To reveal him.
They used that whole panel throughout the night, and it was like, to me, it harkened back a little bit to 10 when they had, I think, was it WrestleMania 10 where they had the door rock?
Yeah.
The big X. Part of it was like that, and it was kind of, or like 20 when they did the video screens at Madison Square Garden. Well, both times, technically. It's a nice little, like, just a small little thing for production-wise, but it was like, all right, cool, I see what you guys are doing here throughout the night.
And then they had, like, the screens that would, like, raise and lower above the ramp that they were using. That was really freaking cool.
Oh, it was done so well later on in the night.
It was. It absolutely was. Like, they used it to perfection. I remember seeing that in the setup, and I was like, because I saw them on the floor, I was like, what are they going to do with those? And then, like, you saw them above the ramp, and it's like, oh, okay, cool. So they're, like, additional display screens. I didn't realize that they could, like, raise and lower them into different configurations. And it's like, oh, that's neat. Like, it's so practical. Like, all of this was very practical, but extremely effective. Like, this whole show, the entrances, I would say, like, the special entrances for the most part were relatively tame. We didn't see anything over the top crazy like some of the stuff that they've done in the past. There was a lot of pyro, so they splashed out for pyro. There was the video screens. They had a couple, like, specialty cars there and in living color, because, you know, they're awesome. But, like, that's pretty much all they did for, like, the special entrances.
I mean, we had Barbie.
That was a fantastic entrance for her.
That was cool.
It was one of those, like, yeah, when you have real-life Barbie sitting there and you can pull off the actual, like, Barbie box entrance the way they did, it was just like, oh, good job, designers.
Very well played. Very well done. But Gunther just got the divided screen. The championship, like, graphic behind him as he was walking was really cool. Like, it was graphically, like, visually very appealing and very effective. Like, it dressed up his entrance nicely, because he has a relatively, like, simple entrance. It's no frills or fuss or anything like that. And yeah, we got underway on this one. The crowd, I don't know what was going on in the crowd, but the crowd kind of took a little bit out of this for me, because I feel like the crowd wasn't super into like the first part of the show. I feel like they kind of didn't wake up until maybe like Tiff and Charlotte. But what do you guys think about that?
I thought they were hot for Jay and Gunther. I thought they were really into it. After that, it trailed for a little bit, like, because there wasn't a lot of heat on some of the matches. But Jade and Naomi had them for a bit, but the Tiffany match really got them back. LA Knight and Fatu got them.
Yeah, LA Knight and Fatu got them. They were a bit into Americano and Phoenix, but I think Tiffany and Charlotte got them back simply because it is so polarizing in that match. Like, when Charlotte came out, you could tell who everyone was cheering for. They made their voices heard of just like, we don't want Charlotte.
I felt, not to like skip around because we should talk about Jay and Gunther, but just to talk about this really quick, I felt kind of bad for her because they tried it again. They gave her the whole like promo package about her getting injured and her coming back and like the whole deal, and man, she showed up and they just boot her out of the building. Like, they didn't want anything to do with her. Well, it's just like,
oh god,
they're just like, no.
Well, it's like I said on Sunday, the whole thing about Charlotte is, if you want to try to run the whole, you know, I came back from injury and doing all of this, no one's going to do it for Charlotte, because her entire existence has just been, you know, I'm Charlotte Flair, bow down to me. There's never been sympathy involved. And I mean, even when the greatest example of this was when they turned Becky, and Becky was supposed to be a heel. She beat the high holy hell out of Charlotte, and everyone cheered. Everyone was just like, absolutely, hit her again, go for it. And then Becky would show up and try to play off the heel part of it, and they would just be like, nah, we support you. That's how much people just don't like Charlotte right now. Like, she'd have to undergo a complete change, but that doesn't fit her character, because her character as a Flair has always been, you know, high-flying, jet-riding, Space Mountain, all that stuff. 14-time women's champion. But they did tell a good story with Jay and Gunther. This was more of a story than necessarily a match.
They took their time with this. This wasn't as aggressive at times as I thought it would be, but they were very methodical in how they did it. And they did a really nice job of blending both Jay and Gunther's styles, because stylistically they kind of clash a little bit, and so the two of them did a very, very, very lovely job of blending each other's like sort of move sets and how they work together. And the size difference was also a thing, and not that it was like horrible, but it's like, again, you have to take the fact that Gunther is just big into account, especially since Jay doesn't have the same stature. So they did a really good job of telling that story, especially having Jay stand his ground a lot and not necessarily getting thrown around like a rag doll. Like, he certainly had to go on the defensive more than once, but so did Gunther. Like, Jay gave as much as he took, if not more.
Oh yeah.
And like, Jay was motivated to take that title. Like, he's like, no, this is my shot. This is it. I'm winning. I'm taking this, and you can't stop me.
Well, I liked the story where, you know, a lot of what we'd seen going into this was Gunther asserting his will and kind of like, he will just clobber people into submission.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of the match, they got to the one point where even where the announcers pointed out, like, Gunther is hitting him with everything in the kitchen sink, and you see Jay kind of smiling and kind of like, yeah, hit me again. Bring it. Bring it. Oh, go ahead.
Keep going.
Yeah, like, come on. Keep the pedal down. Let's go. And part of that played into that last promo that Jay gave Gunther, where he was like, the reason I wasn't able to help my brother is because I was afraid. I'm not afraid anymore. And it's like, that was one of those kind of personification moments where it's like, Gunther is just hitting him with everything, and Jay is just like, come on. And you could see Gunther ahead. All of a sudden being like, what do I have to do now?
Yeah, Jay's like, I've seen you do your worst. I know what your worst is. I know where your line is.
and calling it back to what the finish was, what happened to Jimmy on Raw like 3 weeks ago. Choking out Gunther in return for choking out Jay was the best way to tie the whole story together. And it was a huge surprise to see Gunther tap.
Well, yeah, because for the first, I mean, last year we saw Sammy beat him down. You know, it took the top rope the top rope brainbuster to put him down. Something we hadn't seen before. And again, it was Gunther trying to beat someone into submission and Sammy, for lack of a better term, hulking up to get the win. Mm-hmm. This time it was Gunther was put in a position he hadn't been in before, which was in the sleeper, in a submission style, and Gunther had to tap because it was just like, I can't get out of this, which sends a big message.
It does.
Speaking of Jay, here he comes in the press conference with his brand new shirt.
Wrestle Yeet Mania.
There we go.
But yeah, it was a good match. Told the right story. I think he tapped a little too quickly, but I think it's saving himself. Gunther knows, like, to protect himself. He's not going to put himself in too much damage. Like, he's trapped. He's not going to fight it. He'll give up and save himself for another day. I think that's kind of how that went.
Well, and that's almost, for lack of a better term, an MMA mentality of, like, okay, if you're put in this position, don't try and fight it because you're going to do yourself more harm. Just recognize what's going on, live for another day, come back the next fight.
Also, it's more of a heel thing to tap quick. Babyface is kind of hang on because they drag it out, whether they pass out or whatever, but they drag it out because you're trying to get the crowd to like erupt. A heel tap makes more sense.
All right, I was just making reference to the Hall of Fame segment that got honored.
Yeah, no, it's more because they just drag it out and you get the crowd behind it. Rather, for heels, it's better for a heel to, you don't want to see like, you're not getting behind a heel to survive if you want him to tap, so.
Yeah, you want it over. You're like, do it.
Yeah. So yeah, Jey Uso, world champion.
Good for him. I like that they went ahead and did it, that they pulled the trigger on it. They told the right story to get him here. And it's a nice, we talked about this on Thursday, it's a nice capstone to the whole journey of Jey Uso, right? Like that climb that started 5 years ago is now he's reached the pinnacle, and it's just it's a lovely story. And then of course to like make everybody cry, they had Jimmy waiting for him in the ring to celebrate with him after he won.
And we're all sitting, going, not now,
because there was a moment. I'm not kidding. Where Jay's in the corner and Jimmy's got the title and he's standing over Jimmy with the title. And I'm like, don't do it. Please don't do it. Just enjoy this moment with your brother. Please don't betray him. Do it tomorrow, but don't do it now. Like, feel the moment, man. Feel the moment. Thankfully, he didn't do it. But there's just like, there's a moment where you're like, okay, all right. Just, I don't know if I should trust this or not after everything, but
and the nice
a
thing
lovely
about,
moment.
The nice thing about Jay winning the title is, and we've talked about this with some of the other changes that have happened in recent years, he doesn't have to hold the belt for a year to do this kind of run. He can drop this, you know, in 2 months and two or 3 months and everyone will be like, all right, cool. He had a world title run. He earned it. It can bounce around a little.
I think we're so, especially with like Roman and Cody and Rhea and some of the other champions, I think we've gotten very used to long title reigns because it's like once they put the title on somebody that they're like fully behind and fully support, they tend to leave it there, especially if it's somebody that they're going to use a lot for press, that they're going to send out a lot because, you know, nice big shiny title looks good on them with them in terms of doing the PR work. So I think we've gotten sort of like desensitized to shorter title runs. Because it's, well, that doesn't happen as much with the world titles because, like, both world titles, they've been longer reigns, especially since Roman dropped his. Cody has it, and he's held it for a year. And then Gunther, with his win, he's held it since he won it at SummerSlam?
Yep, SummerSlam.
So he didn't quite make it a year, but he still made it a longer reign than most. So if Jay holds it 2 to 3 months, he drops it at SummerSlam to somebody else and the title moves around, I'm completely fine with that. I have no issue with it whatsoever. Now, I don't want him to go out on Raw tomorrow and drop it. Like, that's pointless.
Yeah.
But, like, give him a decent run with it. Give him some credible contenders, which he'll have. I'm sure Gunther will come back and swing at him for the title because it's like, hey, no, we're not done. I want that back. And this feud will probably continue between the two. We'll see what happens with Jimmy, if they do anything with Jimmy. And then, of course, you have Roman, you have Seth, you have other people that are kind of like lurking in the background that could come for Jay's title as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Oh.
So up next, we have the Bad Day, aka the New Day, taking on the War Raiders for the tag team titles. This was a solid little match. I enjoyed this. Ivar doing Ivar things. That was flying and whatnot. That was insane.
This is where the crowd kind of took a step back for a bit.
Yeah. I felt really bad for like both teams because there was kind of a reaction for the New Day, but there was like no reaction for the War Raiders that I heard. I felt so bad for them. It's like, oh, I'm sorry.
And it's just one of those things, like, don't get me wrong, I think the fans like the War Raiders, but I think in a large setting like this, and also for the build that they've had with this, which was only, what, just a few weeks?
Something like that, yeah.
They weren't fully invested. And some of the things that could really kind of get you involved weren't able to be seen by, like, the large live crowd. Like, what the announcers were touching on with the New Day gear. It's like, if you're watching at home, you're like, ooh, I can see that, and oh, that's a nice touch. But at the same time, that feud is between the New Day and Big E.
Yeah.
Who's not involved with this match.
No.
So it's hard for the fans to really kind of, I think, get with, like, oh yeah, it's the War Raiders they're fighting, but really the whole big thing is it's these two assholes and they're making fun of their injured former friend. So for the crowd, I mean, it's just kind of like, don't get me wrong, good match, you know, right team won in the end in my opinion, but also like with the New Day, they're gonna be the ultimate slimy heel team, so it's also kind of like when they do win, you're kind of like, oh, okay, you know, it kind of, you're not excited about it. You're just like, oh, great, these wormy guys now have the belts. Yay.
I think, too, there's more rebuilding that has to be done with the War Raiders because, no offense to them, they did their best. They tried to make it work, but they were the Viking Raiders, right? And by the end, it was kitschy and it was sticky and it was a gimmick. And it was, at times, hard to take them seriously in the Viking gimmick. Like, it was cool, but it was just also a little silly at times. So I think they have, like, they being WWE has to do more to sort of, like, rebuild them into the serious tag team that we saw in NXT, where they were completely dominant. Because the other side of that, too, is the Viking Raiders had a sort of, like, wishy-washy tenure in WWE where they weren't as dominant or as badass as what they were in NXT. Which was a fairly common thing when talent of that era got called up. So
yeah.
I think if they could build the Viking Raiders back up into, or excuse me, the War Raiders back up into a legitimate threat, then you might have something there. But like in terms of just them being a tag team, it is still a little hard to take them seriously.
Okay. A little side note, just because she just came out in the press conference or the press or post-show thing, it is so jarring to see Jade on WrestleMania, and then see her here with like four times as much hair.
It's Instagrow. That's all it is. Instagrow hair. That's how it happened.
And I love it because now they're showing the side by side where it's like, yeah, she has this really short Storm style haircut, and then you look at her on the panel, and it's these long flowing locks.
Look, she got the extensions put back in. It's fine.
Probably
it's
took
fine.
All night.
Yeah. She was early in the show. It was fine.
New Day come out on top.
And since we're talking about her, which is very good for the heel run, they grabbed the titles and they ran.
Yeah, because Kofi held the foot down, so they'll get a rematch coming up probably soon.
Yeah, but they were like, okay, we won, bye!
We're going to the buffet! See y'all later!
Peace. But speaking of Jade, since she's on TV right now, and we're talking, you know, we're getting ready to talk about her, Jay Cargill took on Naomi, and this, I popped for Jade's entrance because they got Jim fucking Cantore to do it. Like, they paid for Jim Cantore, complete with the Weather Channel logo on the microphone. They shelled out for that shit to get that. They had him do like a full storm weather forecast skit for her entrance to come out. It was actually really well done. It was really good. If you don't, and I'm just going to say this, if you don't know who Jim Cantore is, because some people may not know who he is. He is the epitome of weathermen. And if you live in a storm-prone area, you get like tornadoes or hurricanes, at least in the South. Like if you get the bad weather, right? You know who Jim Cantore is. Because if that motherfucker shows up in your town,
stuff's going
down. You about to get the worst of it. He's like, it's like Jim Cantore, where is Jim, like his general location, and is the Waffle House still open? Those are the scales for storms around here.
So,
like in terms of like how bad it's going to be, because if Jim Cantore's in your town and the Waffle House is closed, odds are you don't have a town anymore. But yeah, so like just the fact that they used Jim Cantore in the entrance, I thought was absolutely hilarious. It was awesome.
Well, Lindsay, the best way to equate this is if you're in a place and you see like a Wolf Blitzer or a Anderson Cooper show up and it's not New
mm-hmm.
Year's,
mm-hmm.
You know you're screwed.
Yeah, you're kind of fucked.
Stuff's going down. Oh my God.
It's like, I need to leave now. Like, I actually, during storm season, it's there. I think there's actually a Twitter that tells people where Jim Cantore was generally going to be. Especially for, like, hurricanes and stuff. They're like, this is where he's going. So, y'all may want to leave. Just saying. But yeah, so they had him do Jade's entrance. She came out. Her gear was fabulous. She looked fantastic. She wore Storm from X-Men style gear. Naomi came out. She did her entrance. Which I think this was the full entrance for the new gimmick.
New music. Mm-hmm. Brand new music for her entrance, which is nice to see. Which I kind of said we would be getting, and we did. I thought out of every match on this show, these two women took the most risk.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, they laid it out there for the most, because I think they had the most to prove out of all of the day ones.
And it's not even that. It's they tried different moves, like they were catching each other, like the jackhammer spot or the power slam or something. They went out and risked trying different things that could have gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, when Jade caught Naomi and put her into the suplex spot just in air, holy shit.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty spectacular. I think with this one too, there was a little bit more to prove, because this was Jade's true solo debut, where she's not with anybody else to sort of like cover for her. This is her standing on her own, carrying a match on her mm-hmm. own. And Naomi was a fabulous opponent to put her with, because she can work anything, right? She can do anything. She's just that talented. So these two did a really fantastic job, and the fact that they pushed boundaries and they did stuff that was outside of the box, I think maybe put a little naysayers about Jade back in their box for a while, because I thought she looked great.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that Naomi did especially well in this match, because Rock, I mean, going back into other matches we've seen Jade perform in prior to this, mm-hmm. I think one of her biggest qualms that I think you and I had pointed out before is that Jade tends to work really fast to her yeah. detriment. It was mm-hmm. like, I have to get to this spot, and I have to get to this spot, and I have to get to this spot, because everything was choreographed for her to hit certain things. And so she'd rush, and it would look really bad. Naomi slowed her down, and they were able to tell much more of a story and kind of flow with what was going on, which I think really helped her.
Agreed. Definitely agreed.
But I liked what they did. I thought they took the risk, and it paid off.
Yeah, and it makes you want to see Jade a little more.
It does. So Jade puts Naomi away, and she is victorious in her solo WrestleMania debut. Also, we're not talking about her yet, but Jesus Christ, look at the welt on Tiffany's head.
She lost a tooth.
I was going to say, there was a spot when she was at the very end, when she's sitting on the apron, where I was like, I couldn't tell if it was like blood on her teeth or something, but there was something different about her smile.
Yeah, it's like she kept like holding up the title, and I kept like looking at her teeth because there was like a stain or something on her tooth, and it's like, did her teeth get messed up? Because I don't know if those are veneers or not. I have no idea. They're probably her natural teeth, but it's hard to know. But yeah. Anyway, she's doing the press conference right now. We're going to talk about Jacob Fatu taking on L.A. Knight for the U.S. Championship. This was a fun little match. This was a lot of fun.
Jacob. Welcome to WrestleMania, Jacob.
Yeah, he had a breakout performance.
I will still say this. Like, Tiffany has a really pretty moonsault that she can pull off that we saw tonight. Mm-hmm. Charlotte can pull off a really nice moonsault. Io, fantastic. I still say that Jacob Fatu has the most effortless moonsault I've seen. The way he just bounces up and hits it perfectly every time. Mm-hmm. It's like, dear God. And for someone his size, too, you're like, what the hell?
It's like, he shouldn't be able to do that, but he can do that, and it's amazing every time he does. Like, he is a force to be reckoned with. He really is.
Well, and the funny thing is, when he first debuted, they gave him, like, that non-speaking gimmick, where he would just sit there and pray, and the only things you really heard out of his mouth were, you know, I love you, Solo. And then the Bloodline broke up, and they kind of went, we're gonna take him off the leash a little bit.
Thank God they did.
And you start to realize how much of a complete package Jacob Fatu really is. Because we saw him in the ring. We saw, you know, he's a powerhouse, and he's agile, and he's big. But when he can actually talk as well and carry it off, and this is where a lot of people, because you heard when they created the Bloodline and then they brought Jacob Fatu in, there was that fear that Jacob was going to overshadow Solo. And we're kind of like, I don't know. Now you're starting to see where everyone was talking about that and going, okay, no, I can absolutely see why they're saying that.
Solo has, like, they're both very similar, but Jacob just has an aura to him that Solo doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the difference, because Jacob has figured out how to capitalize on that. And with everything else he brings to the table, it just works. Like, Solo was a really good enforcer, and he was really good in the non-speaking role. And yeah, he had that aura, and he had that, like, you could see it, and you could see he was going to be a talent. But when they put him in that leadership position, and they put him in that talking role, something disconnected with him, where, especially after everything in the Bloodline and all that Roman did, and just the whole story that they told with it, Solo just could not fill Roman's shoes. And I hate saying that, because he tried. He tried really super hard, but he just can't fill Roman's shoes.
Well,
in terms of carrying that group.
I think you touched on a very important point with that. And to relate this to an even older kind of thing, like, when you had the Horsemen, Flair was always in the role of being the leader, because he just had the charisma. He had the presence. Arn Anderson is always going to be an enforcer. He's never going to be the leader of the group. He's just the muscle. And in this case, that's the role that Solo just is. No fault of his own, but it's like, he's a better, big, quiet muscle than he is, like, trying to take a leadership role. And Jacob just has that natural charisma to be able to be like, no, I absolutely want to just focus on him now.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I can get behind that. And that's okay, because they can find something else for Solo to do, and they can build Solo into something else while they focus on Jacob. Like, they have time on Solo. That's the whole thing. And if he's just in the managerial role and he kind of finds himself in that while he's managing Solo, and they have that weird relationship with each other, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Or if they move Solo to Raw, or if they break him out another way, that's fine too. So moving on, Jacob Fatu won, by the way. He beat LA Knight. And his dad came out and celebrated?
That's not his dad.
Is that his dad? I thought that was his dad.
No.
No. His dad is the Tongan kid.
Oh, Haku was there.
Yeah. The man called Meng.
I thought that was his dad. I'm sorry.
No, that's Hikaleo and the Gorillas of Destiny's dad.
Ah, it's still good to see Haku.
Yeah.
Oh, God, this match.
We're at the Twitter match of the night, y'all.
Oh, Oh, God. Okay, all right. So this match was supposed to be El Grande Americano versus Rey Mysterio, but unfortunately Rey Mysterio got, quote-unquote, injured last night on SmackDown.
Oh, no, he did get injured.
He messed
himself up.
But it's so fucking convenient. Like, just the convenience of the injury is just insane. But he got injured, and so they replaced Rey Mysterio with Rey Fénix for the match. Americano came out with the old-timey filter and the largest mariachi band I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was a mariachi orchestra, and they were dressed up in traditional outfits and Americano masks. And then you had Fénix come out, and he made his WrestleMania debut. This is where they were kind of talking about the AAA stuff a little bit. And you had Vikingo, who was at ringside, kind of get into it a little bit with Rey Mysterio, Americano. He was featured as like a special guest, and then Americano got in his face, and then Americano got kicked in the face as a result of, you know, being a dick. This match was good, but yeah, I'll let you guys talk about it. You guys go first.
It was a good technical match with a lot of shenanigans at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was what you thought you would probably get out of a luchador and a technical wrestler incorporating lucha moves. I still say that this is probably the most entertaining I've ever seen Chad Gable, which unfortunately says something.
He's owning the shit out of this. Like, he's absolutely owning it and selling it like you do. And I mean, I would argue that this is kind of his thing because he was really good in the
Alpha Academy.
The Alpha Academy stuff too. Like, he's just good at like shtick comedy stuff. Like, that's which you wouldn't think he would be, but he is. Like, just his personality and the way he comes across, it works for what he's doing. There is still some question about the gimmick as a whole. It's a little questionable, and it was made a little bit more questionable because I didn't necessarily like the commentary in this match and the fact that Wade and Pat were trying to like pretend like that it wasn't Chad Gable, like the only person that was calling out Americano as Chad Gable was Michael Cole. Like, I don't know if I can necessarily get behind like them pretending that it's not him, because to me that was like, that's what made it somewhat excusable, was that like everybody knows and nobody's trying to play into it except for Chad Gable. Like, he's the only one that's like completely delusional about it. But like them trying to like play up the fact that, oh no, that's not Chad Gable, it's El Grande Americano, like the whole thing tonight was like, I don't know about that. I don't know if I can get behind that. I was surprised. I guess I shouldn't be, but I was surprised Americano went over.
I'm not. I figured that would be the direction. I feel like they wanted to get some more legs out of it, just based on the presentation of it tonight.
I don't want them to. I get that. I just wonder how much legs this really has before. I think, like Lindsay said, if the only person in the delusion is Chad Gable, then, you know, it has a little bit of legs till maybe Backlash.
And that's where it would go, yeah.
I was going to say, I think that Backlash needs to be the absolute end of it. If it goes past that, you run the real risk of fans just not giving a shit. And if that, if you get to that point, you've really kind of hit a problem. Because they're, you know, like, if they're invested in the fact that they don't like Chad Gable, that's fine. If you lose investment, then you've lost everything.
Yeah,
I think, too, it's a taste level thing, right? Like, this is already questionable at best. Like, that's putting it very mildly and very nicely. This has already hit some backlash. They've tied the backlash into the story, tying it with two, like the AAA announcement and associating it with all the AAA stuff that they did tonight. I don't know about that. Like, to me, that was kind of like, ooh, because they, like, had the match, and then they followed it up, like, showing, like, all the AAA officials and everything else, and it's like, that's a bad follow-up. So to me, like, if it ends at Backlash with, like, all the luchadors ganging up on Gable and beating him up and unmasking him and be like, no, you're Chad Gable, goddammit, and you're, like, you're doing us all dirty. Like, you're making fun of our culture, you're making fun of us, you're making fun of our history. Like, basically, F you, and they kick his ass. That's fine. Like, that's really how this should end, is, like, he gets unmasked and he gets exposed and like he pays the price for his hubris. But like if they try to push this much further than what they're doing, I don't know, because to me it becomes a taste thing.
Yeah,
like, well, and especially in the current environment.
Well, I was gonna say, like, they kind of started that a little bit with the Andre the Giant Battle Royal last night, where it's like all the luchadors beat the shit out of Chad Gable,
and it was satisfying. I will admit, I watched that, it was satisfying.
But what I was gonna say is, I wonder if this leads to something like at Backlash, you do something like it's Ray Fenix, someone else, and you introduce Vikingo into it versus versus Americano and American Made.
Yeah.
And you have that moment towards the end of the match where all the luchadors just get their shit in and beat him up. And then, yeah, like, they finish the match, and at the end is the unmasking, and it's like, our culture is not your joke. And it's like, boom, there's the end of the whole thing. And then you move up, you know, American Made collectively onto something else.
Or break them up or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that would be appropriate, but yeah, like, this was, for a match, it was fine. Like, technically everything was fine about it. Gable winning was what it was. But this is kind of one of those things that, like, you question the taste level a little bit. Cause LeMans put it in chat, it's a very old regime type storyline. And it is. It's a very sort of like harken back to a few other things that they've done. Which, again, they live in the time of which they were done, but in the lens of 2025, they are questionable at best. So it's kind of like, I'm surprised they're doing something like this, but I'm also not surprised they're doing something like this. But let's hope that they take it to Backlash and they end it at Backlash. Tiffany Stratton versus Charlotte Flair for the Women's Championship. We had two special entrances in this. We had Tiffy with her Barbie boxes, and we had Charlotte roll up in a chauffeur-driven Rolls Royce. Oh,
Ezra.
They did the same entrance. God.
Yeah. It was, what was, LA Knight came in what, a Lamborghini?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a Maserati, wasn't it?
Or Maserati, whatever it was. It's the same entrance. Come on.
In both of them, it wasn't even them driving. Like, it's another thing if one of them came rolling up in the car, but it's like, I understand why they're both passengers, but yeah. Honestly, and we put this in our group chat, I was like, technically I liked Knight's entrance more.
They just felt very, like, both were fine, but they felt very basic. Like, oh, yeah. That out there, like, a couple of these special entrances stood out, but for the most part, they were very toned down. And I kind of question if they couldn't do a lot because they had the seating around the stage. Like, that was the one thing we forgot to mention at the top of the show, was they had people sitting above, like, the entrance area on the stage, and then they had seating off to the left and the right on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I like, that would be a cool place to sit, but that would also be a shitty place to sit because you have to deal with all the fucking pyro. You're right by it, like, you're right next to it. And then you don't really have that great view of the ring or the entrances because everything is beneath, like, especially if you're on top, the little, like, canopy that they have there.
Well,
so you don't get to see anything.
The canopy, and then, depending on it, you're having to deal with those floating screens that you talked about, and the fact that they, like, lower and raise. So if you're on top of the stage, at some point you're going to be dealing with those things obscuring your view.
Yeah, so I kind of question that, but it's like, it was fine. Like, Charlotte's entrance was what it was, and Tiffy's entrance was good. Like, again, the Barbie boxes that were put in by Mattel, but that was all good. It was all appropriate. And then we got into the match.
I really liked this match. I thought the women showed their hatred. I thought they got very physical, a lot of trash talk. It didn't have to be perfect because you didn't want it to be perfect.
It should be more scrappy with these.
It was, and they went.
This was close. This was tight.
It went a long time. Yeah, I thought this was really good.
The one thing I liked about Tiffany throughout this match, and it's something that we hadn't seen in some of the other newcomer versus Charlotte matches, was that Tiffany had a lot of the Charlotte cheap tactics scouted well.
Yeah,
like, when she tried to go early for going for the knee, and, like, you know, doing the wrap the leg around the pole bit or spot, like, Tiffany saw it coming and countered it. And then she also targeted Charlotte earlier than Charlotte was going after Tiffany, which plays in, I mean, Tiffany's always going to be an opportunist, but it's one of those things like, okay, it's not just your usual kind of face where it's like, oh, I'm going to be upstanding and oh no, I get chop blocked and, you know, I couldn't see this coming. It's like Tiffany's like, no, I know you're going to do this shit. I'm going to get you first.
Yeah, you could tell that she had like made at least a visual effort to prepare for Charlotte. Like they were talking about on commentary, you know, watching tape of Charlotte and how much would be available for Tiffany. And then, but Charlotte always like upping her game and always like coming in with a different strategy. So she's not doing the same thing every time. But Tiffany was still able to like see the stuff that Charlotte was going to do and be, to your point, prepared for it. I also like the fact that we had Charlotte's knee get worked over quite a lot in this match, and it called the figure four, figure eight into question.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time she went to put it on, her knee was compromised enough that she really couldn't put it on, and Tiffany was able to get out of it. And that was one of the things that cost Charlotte, was she just didn't have it in her knee to be able to put Tiffany in that hold.
Well, that was, again, one of the really smart moves by Tiffany, was Charlotte put the figure four on and she's, you know, smacking Tiffany, and Tiffany goes to the one thing that could help her out, which was, yeah, I'm going to attack your knee. And as soon as she did that, Charlotte had to break the hold because it was hurting her as much. And when you see things like when Ric Flair used to put on the figure four, part of, just as a regular fan, I looked at, I'm like, why don't you like try and hit him in the leg? Or like, why don't you just uncouple the interlock that's there and you can get out of it? It's always something that was lingering there. And it's like, finally in this match, you saw it put to use and you're like, oh, okay, that can happen. Good job.
Yeah, that's always the frustration with that move. It's like, well, you know, they've got you in the figure four. Well, hit them back. Yeah. Like try to get out of it. Just don't sit there and writhe in pain. Like actually try to get out of it. Hit them, you know? But and then of course the welt that is on Tiffany's forehead right now, where Charlotte went for her finisher, off the top rope and bounced Tiffany's head off the freaking mat. Holy shit.
That may be where she lost a tooth as well.
Probably where she lost the tooth, because she bounced that like her head bounced like a melon. And it was like, that didn't feel good. That smarts.
Probably,
but they were able to carry on.
Could have been the knee brace. Could have been the knee brace that kind
of. Oh, off the moonsault.
Probably, yeah. She could have smacked it. Oh
yeah, that's true. We had a couple blocked moonsaults from Charlotte, but in the end, Tiffy was able to hit the prettiest moonsault ever, and she puts Charlotte away, which to me is the right call. Like, this was having Tiffany retain and not doing the LOL Charlotte wins. That was absolutely the right call, because this proves Tiffy is, I don't want to say that she was not a legitimate champion before, because she certainly was, but this adds legitimacy to the reign that she's having, to be able to take on a challenger like Charlotte, especially when Charlotte put her working boots on, and be able to take her down and have a really competitive match with Charlotte. Because like everything that Charlotte brought, Tiffany matched and brought more in some cases.
I think the announcers said it best at part of the match when they were like, you know, some people will say Tiffany, you know, cashed in her money in the bank and that's how she got the title, and that may kind of cloud her reign a little bit. This win here, beating Charlotte, especially beating Charlotte at WrestleMania, when other people have not had that ability, adds a feather in the cap of this reign. And like you said, Lindsay, it's not that her reign before this was illegitimate, but this does kind of add an air of like, okay, no, she's credible. She's a good champ.
So Tiffany Stratton walks out, still the champ, and Charlotte just kind of left. One interesting thing to note, and I kind of wonder where this is going to go, if this is going to go anywhere. Charlotte did Stephanie Vaquer's move.
Yeah.
She did it a few weeks ago, too. It's kind of been a thing.
I don't know if she's doing it because she can, or if they're setting up something between the two, or Vaquer's going to go up to Charlotte and be like, the fuck you doing? And that starts a little, like, something between the two of them. Like, I'm like, not sure, but...
Like, Charlotte did the leg thing before, but the repeatedness of it was not something she did. Like, she would do the roll through, like the smash and then the roll through. But the repeated thing was out of Stephanie's book.
Like, they even called it out on commentary. They're like, oh, Stephanie Vaquer is not going to be happy about that. So yeah. I kind of wonder, and she's been, because she's the women's champion in NXT, she's been featured very heavily for Stand and Deliver and other things. So it's like, I kind of wonder if maybe they're looking at having Charlotte work with Stephanie.
All right, let's talk about the main event.
What'd you say, Brent?
I said maybe they're planting seeds, but well, time will tell.
Time will tell. Okay, the battle for Paul Heyman's love. Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, CM Punk all fought each other for no particular reason other than because they want Paul Heyman to like them best in a triple threat match.
I really like the CM Punk entrance. I like the video package. I liked In Living Color playing him to the ring. I thought the entire presentation was good. I liked the throwback to the yellow tights, because that has history for him. That was when he did the pipe bomb promo. It all tied together. Punk usually good at that.
It was a nice way to make it feel special.
I think it was also the first call back to like his first tights in ECW too. I could be wrong. Look up, Brent.
I was gonna say I liked the kind of, I'm always like a history person, so seeing the way they shot that promo or that package with the archival footage of Punk and then like the current version saying the same thing, and just that juxtaposition of like, this is back in the day, this is now, and it's like, I'm still kind of the same person, and but at the same time I'm, you know, 15, 20 years older. I really liked that aspect of it. And then in the same vein of the history, I loved what they did with Roman Reigns on his entrance.
Oh, that was so cool.
The video screens of the Anoa'i bloodline, and you got to see, you know, Yokozuna and him and Afa and Sika all there, and the fact that they lowered them down to the ramp to like be there with him was such a cool sight. And then Seth got Dwayne's fire, or got his flamethrower.
Seth's entrance was weird. I feel like there was a concept there. Like, you could see that there was a concept there. I just don't know if they executed it well, because like, he came out in like this trash bag looking thing, and he had the flamethrower, and then the screen went black, and it's like, is my feed fucked up? Like, what's going on? And
that's
then
what,
like, because like, it was black for like, I want to say 30 to 45 seconds. Like, it was black for a while, and I'm sitting here looking at it like, what is wrong with the feed? And then it comes back up and there's Seth in all white.
Okay, so that mine buffered. Legitimately buffered.
Oh, see, for mine, the funny thing is, it went dark and I looked up in the corner and I could see the clock, or I could see the timer on Peacock still running. So I was like, okay, did they just lose feed? But no, I'm still getting the closed captioning for the audio. And then I realized like why Seth was wearing the big baggy black over thing was to conceal, you know, the white gear under.
Yeah, so like it buffered, it had to restart, and it, like everything. So it's like, oh, I saw him like open the jacket, and then it's like buffer, and it's like it showed the error. Like, your thing is buffering a lot. It's like, okay.
Yeah, see, but for me, it went black, and for a second, I thought it froze because it's like, what? What is it doing? Because I was sitting here, and then it came back, and it was Seth in all white, and I was like, oh, okay. So I feel like it was just, like, there was a concept there. It just, for whatever reason, it didn't execute the way that I feel like they wanted it to. Because, like, when it came back, because it was almost like the Taker-Shawn thing, you know? Where, like, Taker was in all black, and then Shawn was, like, in the all white, and Seth's gear was reflective. And so when they hit him with those white lights, he just like literally shined and glowed in the light, which was a nice effect. But like, it was strange. But shout out to Seth's white pants. I feel like they are the MVPs of this match, because goddamn, those things did not get a stain on them. I don't know what they hit those with or what they were made out of, but there wasn't one goddamn stain on them.
So this match was really good. This whole entire setup of a match, it's really well done. We also learned that it took 4 hours to break the brand new tables.
Somebody had to do it. You know, they've tried before in the past. They didn't get it done. It was like, God damn it, we are going to break these tables.
And they're new. They are brand new tables.
Yeah, they were curved. They've got like the LEDs on the bottom. It was...
Like we,
they were nice. They were real nice.
Right. They had the LEDs when they moved to Netflix. We were kind of using the old table with new little stuff, but they curved it a little bit. Now it's like, oh, no one's going to go through them. They went through both.
Yep.
Broke
just
them
to
both.
Prove a point.
But
By God, don't piss off Roman Reigns. He will put you through both tables.
Pretty much. But no, I thought Heyman did his job well. I thought they did a lot of really good false finishes. Like, I mean, you talked at the end. I'm talking like Heyman selling early where...
Oh, yeah.
He's just like him sitting on the stairs, and like every time you look over, don't go after Roman, don't you don't have to do that. Go do that. But no, multiple finishes, multiple pedigrees and spears, and go to sleeps. And the timing of the one where he went for the spear into the pedigree was well done.
That was beautiful.
I loved how the commentary even played up. Like Paul just got more despondent as the match went on, to where there was that great shot of like. Both tables are destroyed. Everyone's down in the ring. And you just have Paul Heyman sitting on the steps looking like his entire world is fucking over.
Yeah.
He's
I want
like,
someone to meme that.
What's going on?
I want someone to meme that because Heyman's sitting there, right? And you can just tell. You can see it on his face. He's like, I am literally too fucking old for this. I am so over all of this shit. I just want to go home. Like, that was the look on his face. And it was so perfect. It was so perfect. Like, Paul Heyman was just the chef's kiss to this match. And just the story that was revolving in this match. Because it was, what I liked was, it didn't become about Paul until the end. Like, they were really, really good about focusing in on how much Roman and Seth and Punk just don't like each other. And they beat the shit out of each other. We had a little bit of crowd surfing. We had Roman decide he wanted to cannonball into the crowd.
You had Seth try to be the architect and the
fail.
Just tiny. Well, I like the tiny bit of like Roman doing that. Like, oh my God, do I do this? Do I fuck it? Let's go. And like, right as the moment comes, he's just like, nope, screw you, Seth.
Boom. Right. Like, no,
I still hate you.
But we got the moment, which is what I think everybody wanted. We got the moment. But I liked how they told that whole story. And then once they had kind of like just absolutely devastated each other, and like everybody had thrown what everybody had at everybody else, right? Like mm-hmm. They were all down. They were all tired. They all just wanted this to end. Then in that moment, that's when it became about Paul. And he had Paul get up and he gets a chair and he walks over to the ring and everybody's like, what's he gonna do? Because like Roman and Punk were the closest to Paul. And then on the opposite side of the ring, facing the ramp, was Seth. So it's like, how are they gonna do this? And God, just the way they did this was so freaking good. Because you have Paul hand Punk the chair. It was a game of musical chairs, y'all. Paul hands Punk the chair. And Punk gets an arm to the nuts for his trouble.
Hold on. Before you go to that, Paul Heyman starts screaming, you made me do this. You made me choose. You made me choose.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue.
Which, by the way, in the year of our Lord 2025, why are people not wearing protective gear? I would think y'all would know better. But maybe not. So Punk goes down and Paul picks up the chair and he goes, my tribal chief. And he gets down on one knee and he offers the chair to Roman. And Roman takes the chair and he beats the shit out of Punk with the chair. Mind you, Seth is still dead on the other side of the ring. And everybody thinks that Paul Heyman has gone back to Roman Reigns. Everybody thinks that Paul Heyman is going to return to his tribal chief. And we see Seth start to get up and we see Seth facing the ramp. And it's the exact scenario 10 years ago. Reversed, where Seth has his back to Roman. Roman has the chair. And Paul Heyman, with that evil glint in his eye, is like, do it, do it, do it. And so Roman puts Paul behind him. He swings back, ready to hit that chair. And then Paul Heyman drops to one knee, and Roman gets a forearm to the nuts and goes down.
The thing about the crotch that Paul gave to Roman, so it's like, when it came to Punk, he just did, like, the uppercut.
Yeah.
And Punk drops. If you rewatch what he does with Roman, it's like, he hits him, and then, like, moves his, like, essentially, like, it's not just a simple punch. It's, like, making sure that Roman feels this shit.
Yeah, it was almost like he was like rubbing them a little bit. It was a little weird. I thought his sleeve got stuck for a second, but Roman goes down like a sack of potatoes, drops the chair. Paul picks up the chair. He hands it to Seth, who's waiting for it, because that was the plan all along, was for Paul Heyman to betray both Punk and Roman, and Seth cashes in his favor.
And be Paul Heyman.
And he gets Paul Heyman. And Seth Rollins, as a result of being one step ahead of everybody, wins the match and walks out of WrestleMania victorious. This was so fucking good. Do you want to be smug now? Would you like to be smug now?
I will just say two words. Called it.
That's all you want to do? You're going to save it for tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow. Tomorrow will be more. Tomorrow will be all okay. In. But with this, it's just, I want to say, like, basically, aside from the two crotch shots, this played out the exact way I thought it was going to. And I'm so glad it turned out this way, because I think it revitalizes Seth's character. Don't get me wrong. The fans love doing the song. But I feel like with Seth, it was very much like he had the clothes, he had the song, but that he's just been kind of there for a while.
Yeah, he's stagnant.
He's stagnant, and I think giving him Paul and turning him, you know, maybe a bit more heel now will give him a chance to take another step, because now he can just be like, I did this to save everyone from CM Punk and Roman Reigns. Like, this is, you know, this is what you all needed, and I'm filling that role. And now it's going to be like that kind of like, I know what's better for you kind of thing. And the fans can now start to turn a bit more and be like, nah, shut up.
I think with him too, it gives Seth a chance to be that sort of cerebral, dangerous character again, which he does very well. And I think the one thing that we've all forgotten about Seth, because he hasn't done it in so long, is that he is exceptionally dangerous.
Yeah.
Because he's always one step ahead, at least one step ahead of his opponents. And we don't necessarily see that. Like, we got that when he first came out of the Shield, and he was with the Authority, and he was doing all of that. Like, we got that character, and then he ran that character dry, turned it face, and then he kind of went into what he's doing now in different iterations and different variations of it. So the fact that we really haven't seen that side of Seth, like the architect side, in a long, and I mean long, long time, because we got it in the Shield. But it was it was different in the Shield than versus what he did with the Authority. Like, the fact that we could get that again, and we even saw just like a glimpse of it tonight with Paul, where he's playing the game. Like, Roman and Punk, they're playing checkers. Seth is playing chess.
And I think what this does is, so Punk doesn't need Paul. He wanted Paul there, but he doesn't need him. Punk can run great on the mic. He's, you know, popular with the fans. He doesn't necessarily need Paul Heyman to do anything. Roman, for lack of a better term, I think, has outgrown Paul. I think when he first came back and you were starting to do the tribal chief gimmick, Paul served as a great role in, like, he could talk for Roman. Roman could stand there and just be intimidating. And then Roman started to grow on the mic in that tribal chief role, to where I would say for about the last year, he didn't really need Paul Heyman. He was able to carry the segments, and Paul could kind of add some, you know, visual response elements, but it wasn't really like segments hinged on him. Mm-hmm. And so now you can kind of break Paul away and let Roman kind of stand on his own and evolve the character, either as the tribal chief still, or if you take it in any kind of other direction, letting Roman kind of do what he can on his own for the next, you know, 2 years, we'll say. With Seth, it's going to be almost like this sinister, you know, pairing where they're both very strategic, and it's like they can work back and forth to put together the ultimate plan.
Mm-hmm. And I'm down for all of it, especially since we saw Jay get crowned as a champion tonight, and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
I was going to say, Jay Uso has no shortage of potential challengers waiting in the wings.
Nope, he does not, and I'm looking forward to all of it. So, gentlemen, final thoughts on night one.
Go, Brent.
I think overall it was good. I don't know if there was, like, one of those potential kind of like, oh my god, this is an ultimate standout match. I mean, there were some good matches in there between Jay and Gunther and Naomi and Jade. Jacob and LA was a good match. You know, Tiffany and Charlotte was a nice, you know, emotional kind of match between them. The main event lived up to kind of what we thought. But I don't think there's going to be one of those where it's like, you know, a year or two from now when we're going through the WrestleMania matches again for a greater than great debate where I'm like, this is going to be a semifinal match. But they all kind of did. There wasn't one where I was like, ugh, why did I have to sit through that? They were all good for a nice seven match card. And it ended early enough where I'm like, all right, I feel entertained. I feel refreshed. Tomorrow, I'm still looking forward to the next set of matches. Instead, I feel completely spent. Oh God, we have to do this again tomorrow.
So
you know,
so Triple H was talking about it. It's like he was creating an album. Like that's how the creative process works for this show. So we just had the A side. Tomorrow's the B side, basically. We got
Match still sitting out there for the B side.
There's a big match sitting out there for the big side. The main event tonight delivered, which is what people really came to see. Everything else told the story they needed to. We crowned three new champions. I thought the show was very solid. Like, when you go back in time, you mentioned, like, where would they be in semifinals. But when you stack the card together, it will go down as one of the better shows in the history of Mania because there's been a lot of stinkers in terms of some matches on shows. Like, you have a good open and a good main, but there's been, like, 5-6 minute matches that didn't, like hit or were too fast. You'll look back at this in a few years go, like, all right, that was good, solid. Everything was solid. And you could go back and watch it, and it's like, ah, that was a solid show. Nothing blew you away until the main event, the last two matches. Nothing was really blow away. You gave the fans what they wanted in Jay winning, and they gave you an angle to carry your television forward. And they reset SmackDown's U.S. title division with Jacob having the title. I'd say a B. Like, it was a solid B.
Yeah.
I think the fact that we don't feel drained from it, I take that as a positive because to Brent's point, this is a very like packed week with the Hall of Fame and with Stand and Deliver. We're not there. This is just what we get to see. But like, I always call it wrestling hangover by Monday because like you can judge what the weekend was based on the level of the wrestling hangover that you have come Monday Night Raw. And I like the fact that this isn't an exhausting experience. Now, granted, I didn't watch everything. I didn't watch Stand and Deliver. I was saving that for later in the week. I didn't watch the Hall of Fame yet. I've only watched the highlights of it. But, like, just watching, because, you know, the card itself was a 4-hour show. So the fact that you don't feel, like, drained and emotionally spent after a 4-hour show and you're prepared to do it again the next day, I feel like is a huge positive for them. Like, there have been WrestleManias where it's like, God, I just don't want to sit through this whole thing, especially since they got through like 2 days. Like they've started doing that. Like there's been a couple of WrestleManias where you're like, God, I don't want to do this again tomorrow. Like I'm so tired. But like this is, I mean, it wasn't a knockdown drag out. Oh my God, this is amazing WrestleMania. Like it certainly wasn't that. Would I have liked certain matches and certain rivalries to have more oomph to them? Yeah, sure. Of course I would. Like there's always room for improvement. There's always a chance to do more, do better in certain cases. But I think for what they gave us, this was really solid. This is really good. It was entertaining. What you wanted to deliver and what you wanted to happen in specific instances happened, at least for me personally. And that's the mark of a good show for me. It's like, if I walk away from it feeling satisfied and feeling entertained, which is what this is supposed to be, then they did fine.
I think what Rock said about Hunter and the album really kind of is a good metaphor because you had a lot of different style matches on here, like song styles on an album where it's like, okay, this is a fast song. Okay. This is kind of a, maybe a little bit more upbeat poppy or whatever. And you're able to just hit those good points for what this is. And after you're done with the one side, you're kind of like, okay, cool. And now we get to come back tomorrow refreshed and get a whole nother set.
Which should be good.
Mm-hmm.
Which should be very good. But with that, we're going to go because you guys have to do this again tomorrow. I don't, but you do. You got stuff to plug up, Rock, so plug away.
I've watched wrestling content for 14 hours today. I just did. I did the math.
He needs a nap.
It's been a lot. We'll be back again tomorrow night. Wrestle Talk Radio. Once WrestleMania ends around 11 p.m. Eastern, we'll talk about it with Casey, Brant, and Tim. Monday, it's Raw post show, 10:30-ish p.m. Eastern, right after Monday Night Raw. Talk about things on the go. The Raw after Mania. We'll talk about night two. That was WrestleMania Sunday on the rack, 10 p.m. Eastern. This Thursday, CB Radio Live returns next Saturday in this time slot. We'll figure out what we're gonna do. We're getting close to the wrestling hangover. A little bit. After this week. Next couple of days. Then it'll hit. Then it will hit. It's at Wild Talk Radio. It's facebook.com/WildTalkRadioNetwork. It's Rack Radio Show on all social media platforms. And wherever you get podcasts, and search the Rack Radio Show. It's at. Chat, if you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming Support Chat by clicking the purple rectangle button below the screen. You can use credit card Rockasock or
Lin's M Ward.
In the Fortnite item shop or Epic Games Store when you buy Cody Rhodes and John Cena, the main eventers of WrestleMania. I was getting to that. The two main eventers of WrestleMania are in the Fortnite item shop right now. Think about just that as a concept. They're in the item shop together at the same time.
The fact that that you can recreate the entire John Cena heel turn using Fortnite characters is absolutely insane.
And if you like Star Trek Wars, stuff is coming too. But also The Undertaker.
Star Wars, honey. Star Wars.
Star Trek Wars, yeah. It's coming. May 2nd for Lindsay's birthday.
Oh, a whole season worth, possibly, Rock.
37 days. It's only.
Have you seen the trailer?
It's only 37 days.
Have you seen the trailer, Brent?
No, not yet. I'm going to.
Anyway. Okay. Undertakers, so use the codes because we are hashtag Epic Partner. Brent, plug your stuff.
All right, everyone. If you want to find me, you can take a look across some social media platforms: X, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, Twitter/X. Like I said, either at Kane Kittens or Kane.Kittens. One of those will get you to where I am located.
All right, you can follow me on most of social medias at Lin's Ward, LNSWRD. You can check me in on Twitch, twitch.tv/Lin's Ward. You can follow me on YouTube, youtube.com/@SimmaLin'sWard. And you can follow me on TikTok, Lin's Ward Zero. And while you're liking and subscribing and following and doing all the things, you can head over to Matt's channel, MBGFilms, youtube.com/MBG1211. Go over there, tell him we said hi, and subscribe and like his content. So for Rock, and for Brent, I'm Lindsay Ward. You've been listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com. WrestleMania, Night 1. She's in the books. Everybody, for the full recap, head over to Wild Talk Radio tomorrow, Wrestle Talk Radio tomorrow. Till then, bye! Day one, it's just me, ooh. Day one, it's that. Light them all up and knock them down like this. Ooh, so it's just me, ooh. Okay. Day one, it's just me, ooh. Day one. WildTalkRadio.com.